Happy Friday to you all. I hope you're making plans for a great weekend, including the Lord's Day spent with your brothers and sisters in Christ at your home congregation. If you don't have one, find one. Get plugged in, stay plugged in. If you're looking for a place right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, we invite you to come and check us out, and perhaps we'll be the place where you settle down. Every once in a while on Friday, I like to say a big thank you to those of you who are supporting Into the Word financially, keeping us on the air here at this radio station, but also keeping us up online. God bless you for your generosity and for your support. I would like to mention one of our major supporters, and that would be the Ritter family, who keep the program going quite well. Mike and Andrea Ritter are the people behind Great Lakes Heating and Air Conditioning, and I would very much uphold their services as something that could help you out. And if you do that, then you can know that that is also giving a blessing to the work of God, both in a local church down in North Liberty, but also here in this program. Thank you for thinking about them and thanking God for them. Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to Isaiah chapter number 14. We're going to pick up at verse number 20. This is part of an extended taunt against the kings of Babylon. Isaiah is living in a time period when some envoys from the little bitty holding of Babylon have come to congratulate King Hezekiah for his resistance against the Assyrian Empire and for the fact that he's recently had a miraculous recovery from a fatal illness. And unfortunately, Hezekiah showed these envoys everything within his kingdom. And he was told that the Babylonians would eventually come back and take everything from the Judeans. But the prophecies of Isaiah include a prediction that the future Babylonian Empire is going to be taken down by the Medes and the Persians, and that the kings of Babylon will end up in Sheol, the place of the dead spirits, the departed spirits. And therefore, Israelis, that is, ethnic Israelis, later to be styled as Jews, they will be able to look back in history once they're back into the land and reestablishing the Judean presence there to say, yeah, you Babylonians thought you were big and tough when you took us down, but then God took you down. And so that's kind of what we're in the middle of right now, is a taunt that will be sung later in history, once Babylon is no more. So verse 20, you will not be joined with them in burial because you have destroyed your land, you have slain your people. So the prediction that we were talking about at the end of last episode was that some of the Babylonian kings at the very end of the empire, they're not even going to have graves. They're not even going to be able to go and be buried at home because of God's judgment being so severe. May the offspring of evildoers never born be named. So let's not talk about them ever again. Prepare slaughter for his sons because of the guilt of their fathers, lest they rise and possess the earth and fill the face of the world with cities. Now, I do feel the need to comment here that the sons are not being punished here for the sins of their fathers, because that's against God's moral principles. It's against the rules that he gave the Israelis. What's being spoken of here in verse 21 is that the wicked sons of these wicked fathers are going to be cursed, and because of that curse, they will never be able to carry out their wicked plans. They will never be in charge again. And so the Babylonian Empire is at an end. There is a little something in the book of Revelation and a little bit from the book of Daniel that the final world ruler, the beast leader, if you will, some people like to refer to him as the Antichrist, but that's never used in the book of Revelation, nor in the book of Daniel. This final world ruler may, in fact, set up his headquarters at or near the ruins of Babylon for the last little bit of the resistance during that 3.5-year period known as the Day of the Lord. But he may not be Babylonian. He may be Assyrian by his ethnicity. And so this passage is still true, even at that later date, that the Babylonian king group are never going to be fully in charge ever again. Verse 22, and here's the reason why. I will rise up against them, declares he who is of the hosts, Yahweh Tzabaoth, God's military title, and will cut off from Babylon name and remnant, descendants and posterity, declares he who is. I will make it a possession of the hedgehog, possibly the porcupine or the owl, some sort of animal, and pools of water, and I will sweep it with the broom of destruction, declares he who is of the hosts. And so God makes it very clear at the end of this little taunt, the Babylonians are never going to recover from my judgment. They will be put on the dust heap of history. And they were. Verse 24 shifts to a different group that will come under God's judgment. That's the Assyrians. In the time of Isaiah, they were the current bad guy, the troublemakers. And so there needs to be something about them in these prophecies of God's judgment. Verse 24, he who is of the hosts has sworn, as I have planned, so shall it be. As I have purposed, so shall it stand, that I will break the Assyrian in my land, and on my mountains trample him underfoot, and his yoke shall depart from them, and his burden from their shoulder. So God has already made it plain that the Assyrians are not going to be able to overrun Jerusalem. They're not going to be able to overrun Judea in totality. They might be able to take out some cities here and there, but they're not going to be able to overwhelm the Judean kingdom. And it's not just that. Even the Israelis, the ethnic Israelis that they've taken away into exile, will be back. Not the ones that were taken away, but their descendants. God will bring the Israelis back from Assyrian and Babylonian exile and reestablish them in the land. And so the Assyrians won't be the winners in the end. Verse 26, this is the purpose that is proposed concerning the whole earth. This is the hand that is stretched out over all the nations. For he who is of the hosts has purposed, and who will annul it? So who can stop God from carrying out his judgments? Nobody. His hand is stretched out. Who will turn it back? Who can make God stop what he's doing? And the answer is rhetorically, nobody. Absolutely nobody can stop him. Now, we've already looked at the remaining verses in this chapter because this little bit has a time tag to it. They took place in the year of King Ahaz's death. So we already dealt with that in that time period. Chapter 15, verse 1. An oracle, or a bit of information to be delivered concerning Moab. Now, Moab is the kingdom located to the south, or excuse me, to the east of the Dead Sea. So they are a neighbor of sorts of the Judean kingdom. And from time to time, they've been a problem to the ethnic Israelis. And so they have judgment coming their direction. And we've seen in other places that the judgment was going to come from the Assyrians coming into the region. And so we get a little bit of that brought back up again at this point under the prophecies of Isaiah. An oracle concerning Moab. Because Ar of Moab is laid waste in a night, Ar is one of the cities, Moab is undone. Because Kir of Moab is laid waste in a night, Moab is undone. And so you'll see a lot of the cities of the kingdom of Moab mentioned through this context. We're not going to worry about where every last one of them are. Many of them are along a path called the Royal Highway of ancient times. And Israel, when they were coming toward the Promised Land back in the time of Moses, actually followed that ancient highway and passed either through or by some of these very places. But here, judgment is coming. Verse 2, he's gone up to the temple, or possibly just simply the house of Moab, and to Dibon, to the high places to weep over Nebo. That's actually the region near which Moses was buried. In fact, that's how it got its name. Nebo is related to the word prophet in Hebrew. And so where the prophet Moses was buried became Nebo, Mount Nebo. And over Medeba, Moab wails. So there's grieving over the judgment that's coming against Moab. On every head is baldness, every beard is shorn. Now, people sometimes did that to themselves out of grief, a demonstrative way of showing that they were broken. But we also know that sometimes conquerors would shave the heads, the hair of the head, the beard of the head, of captives, of slaves. So on every head is baldness, every beard is shorn. In the streets they wear sackcloth, on the housetops and in the squares everyone wails and melts in tears. So sackcloth is also something that is worn out of grief, but also something that is given to prisoners and slaves when they're rich clothing, their valuable clothing, is confiscated from them. Verse 4, Heshbon and Eliyaleh cry out, their voice is heard as far as Jahaz, and therefore the armed men of Moab cry aloud, his soul trembles. So all this is imagery about the invading armies of the Assyrians coming through, and there's nothing the Moabites can do about it. My heart cries out for Moab. Her fugitives flee to Zoar. Zoar was the only city of the five cities that was spared in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. It was a little town called Bela, I think, at that time. But it gets the name Zoar because it was small. Lot called it that. And so it's on the southeast corner of the south bay of the ancient Dead Sea. And you can actually go and see that there's a community there today over in the kingdom of Jordan. And so that's one of the places they try to run to get away from the Assyrians, probably intending to cross over into Judea. For at the ascent of Luhit, they go up weeping. On the road to Horonaim, they raise a cry of destruction. The waters of Nimrim are a desolation. The grass is withered. The vegetation fails. The greenery is no more. God was sending not just the Assyrians, but bad climate, bad weather, as part of the judgment. We've seen this in other passages talking about this time period. Therefore, the abundance they've gained and what they've laid up, they carry away over the brook of the willows. For a cry has gone around the land of Moab. Her wailing reaches to Eglaim. Her wailing reaches to Beer Elim. For the waters of Dibon are full of blood. Why? Because a lot of death. For I will bring about Dibon even more. A lion for those of Moab who escape for the remnant of the land. Once the Moabites are killed in large numbers for resisting, the remnant is collected up and they're relocated, they're sent into exile, and the few people that are allowed to stick around, we've seen this happen with the Israelis when they were taken out of the land. The people that were left behind or the people that were relocated there, the wild animals had boomed population-wise when people weren't around for a bit. And so lions start attacking those that survive or those that move back in. And so that seems to be the case in Moab as well. Send the lamb to the ruler of the land from Selah. Selah may be Pella, or excuse me, Petra, I think, in Edom to the south. And so there might be a little mention here of some connection between these neighboring countries. Send the lamb to the ruler of the land from Selah by way of the desert to the mount of the daughter of Zion. So make some sort of appeal over to the Judeans. Like fleeing birds, like a scattered nest, so are the daughters of Moab at the fords of the Arnon. Arnon is the north border of Moab around this time period. Give counsel, give justice, make your shade like night at the height of noon, shelter the outcasts, do not reveal the fugitive. Let the outcasts of Moab sojourn among you, be a shelter to them from the destroyer when the oppressor is no more and destruction is ceased and he who tramples underfoot has vanished from the land. Then a throne will be established in steadfast love, and on it will sit in faithfulness in the tent of David, one who judges and seeks justice and is swift to do righteousness. Now, this is a messianic passage, verse number 5 specifically. Once history moves past this time of the Assyrians and the Babylonians, the Israeli kingdom, the Israeli homeland is going to be reestablished with people coming back, ethnic Israelis coming back to the promised land. And those ethnic Israelis are going to be joined by ethnic groups from surrounding areas. And some of them will find a place in the Jewish faith. And eventually, Jesus will come to Jerusalem to the reestablished Jewish homelands. And he will start preaching the gospel of the kingdom, not just to Israelis, but to anybody else that's been seeking refuge with the Israelis. And that would include, apparently, some of these Moabites, at least descendants of these Moabite peoples. And some of them will embrace the death and resurrection of Jesus to be saved by He who is salvation. And they will become part of the church of Jesus. This is the tent of David, where the one who judges and seeks is bringing them to righteousness. And so it's established in steadfast love, the throne of Jesus, the throne of salvation. But it's available, we know, very quickly, once the church gets established, to all ethnic groups, including me, in my ethnic group. And I am so thankful that I can be part of that kingdom of Jesus Christ. And then eventually, of course, Jesus will be back and he will finish the story. So I like verse number 5 about the establishment of the kingdom for everyone. And it's kind of just hidden here as a little gem in the story of Moab. Verse number 6. We have heard of the pride of Moab, how proud he is, of his arrogance, his pride, his insolence, in his idle boasting. He's not right. So part of the problem of Moab was being self-serving, self-centered. I mean, that's really at the root of sin. It's all about me, 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 me. I want what I want, and I don't care how it impacts on anybody else. And so Moab's pride brings God's judgment. Therefore, let Moab wail for Moab. Let everyone wail, mourn, utterly stricken for the raisin cakes of Kir Harasheth. That's a reference to false worship, the giving of raisin cakes to a god or a goddess, apparently at this particular place. It brings judgment. For the fields of Heshbon languish, the vine of Sibmah, the lords of the nations have struck down its branches, which reached to Jazer and strayed to the desert. Its shoots spread abroad and passed over the sea. So Moab had spread out over time and had engaged in sinful, selfish activity. But now it's getting its wings clipped. It's getting its runners pruned by the coming of God's judgment. Therefore, I weep with the weeping of Jazer for the vine of Sibmah. I drench you with my tears, O Heshbon and Elealeh, for over your summer fruit and your harvest, the shout has ceased. Meaning, you're broken, and so you can't do your agriculture. You can't bring in your summer fruit. And so you have nothing to celebrate, harvest time. And joy and gladness are taken away from the fruitful field. And in the vineyards, no songs are sung. No cheers are raised. No treader treads out wine in the presses. I've put an end to the shouting. And therefore my inner parts moan like a lyre for Moab, my innermost self for Kir Harasheth. So God takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked. He said that in some way or another many times. God is not happy that Moab and other countries are having to come under the judgment that he is sending by the hands of the Assyrians. He wants them to repent. And so Isaiah is grieving over the message that he's having to give about the judgment of God against Moab. Verse 12, and when Moab presents himself, when he wearies himself on the high places, when he comes to his sanctuary to pray, he will not prevail. So it won't do him any good to seek the gods and goddesses for help. This is the word that he who is spoke concerning Moab in the past. But now he who is has spoken, saying, in 3 years, like the years of a hired worker, the glory of Moab will be brought into contempt in spite of all his great multitude, and those who remain will be very few and feeble. So Moab in the past thought that they were in control, that they were able to expand that control over others. But as Isaiah speaks this prophecy, writes these things down, Moab is on borrowed time. Within 3 years, whenever this has been issued, the judgment is going to start falling. And Moab will be eradicated and brought to its knees and judged. And the survivors will be very few, and they will have no real power. This brings us now to chapter 17, switch to another oracle. And we're running out of time, so we're only going to be able to introduce it. It is an oracle concerning Damascus. Damascus is to the north of the Promised Land, not very far. But we have seen a prophecy before that Damascus is going to be obliterated as a city. And we know that that has not happened in history. And so I will say in our closing moments, it seems that what we're about to read in verse 1 is going to happen at some point future to us.